IQ skill number 3, instant rapport and programmed attraction. How do you get that social synchronization? You see, a great persuader can connect with anyone in 30 seconds or less. First impressions take only seconds to form, but they last a lifetime. This is a critical step to develop because the cement dries fast. How do you ensure that you're making those early seconds really count? That first judgment or opinion of you is critical to your success. In this fast-paced world, you probably won't get a second chance. You have to make it happen the first time. We've all been told, never judge a book by its cover. Yeah, right. Everyone is judging everyone else. Intentionally or not, people are constantly judging and categorizing others, compartmentalizing them into boxes. There are many boxes, sharp, strange, weird, intelligent, dense, geeky, powerful, even annoying. But here's what it comes down to. When you create a positive perception, you have an 85% chance of persuasion. With a negative perception, you only have a 15% chance. Have you ever met a perfect stranger and just hit it off? You had plenty to talk about, and you almost felt as if you'd met before. It just felt right. You were so comfortable with this person that you were able to talk about anything. You probably lost track of time. You quickly developed such a strong bond that you knew what she was going to say before she even spoke. Everything just clicked between the two of you. It might have been a physical attraction, or it might have just entailed being on the same wavelength. Either way, you felt your ideas were in sync and you enjoyed your time with each other. This is rapport. Rapport is equivalent to being on the same wavelength with the other person. Rapport is the key to mutual trust. With rapport, we can differ in our opinions with someone else, yet still feel a strong bond. Rapport can even exist between two people with little in common. The key is always to have your rapport radar on. Many persuaders can't tell if and when they're connecting. They think they're doing everything right, and they're doing all the stereotypical rapport-building things, being friendly, enthusiastic, or fun. But the reality is that in 86% of the cases, they're not building rapport and are failing to connect with their audience. Studies show that not only do 75% of the people not like all the gushy, chit-chatty stuff, but 99% of them won't even bother to stop and tell you when they're annoyed. The proverbial bad salesman comes to mind here. He acts too chummy and tells stupid jokes, all while thinking everyone loves him. You probably met him. What did you do when you did? If you're like most people, you politely endured the encounter and made up some excuse to get him off your back, and then swore to yourself that you'd never get stuck talking to him again. Reality check, here it comes. This annoying person could be you. Let me tell you another fable about the hare with many friends. A hare was very popular with the other animals. They all claimed to be her friend, but one day she heard hounds approaching and she hoped to escape them with the aid of her many friends. So she went to the horse and asked him to carry her away from the hounds on his back. But he declined, stating that he had important work to do for his master. "I feel sure," he said, "that all your other friends will come to your assistance." The hare then applied to the bull, hoping he would scare the hounds with his sharp horns. The bull replied, "You know, I'm very sorry, but I have a different appointment. I feel sure, however, that our friend the goat will do what you want." The goat, however, felt he would get hurt. The ram, the hare felt for sure, was the proper friend to apply to. So she went to the ram and told him the story. The ram replied, "Another time, my friend. I do not like to interfere on the present occasion, as hounds have been known to eat sheep as well as hares." The hare then applied, as a last hope, to the pig, who regretted that he was unable to help her, as he did not like to take responsibility upon himself. By this time, the hounds were getting quite close, and the hare decided to run. She luckily escaped from the hounds. What's the meaning? Everyone will act like your friend until you need help. Everyone will act like they like you until you ask for their business. Old school persuaders have a tendency to walk into an office and look for things on the wall or a desk to make small talk about. Then they use this small talk to try to bond with a potential client. Yeah, at times this technique can be a great skill and used to have great success, and sometimes you can win friends. However, we live in a different world today than we lived just 10 years ago. Time is now of the essence. Because your audience is pressed for time, you have to get right to the point. Most people don't appreciate useless dribble drabble. Research tells us that the majority of people do not appreciate unsolicited small talk, and many find it offensive. people buy from those who understand their wants and needs. As I was doing my research on Persuasion IQ, I had a couple of managers tell me they had removed items from their office. Trophies, golf club pictures, fish on the wall. So the rookie salesperson wouldn't force them into talking about it one more time. So how do you really know when you're connecting? You want to be friendly, but not fake. Your aim to be engaging, but not annoying. You're enthusiastic, but not overbearing. If you can harness the power of your rapport radar, you'll be able to read nonverbal cues, detect unspoken messages, and decipher the true feelings behind facial expressions, body language, and attitude. Instead of taking them through a rigid, pre-formulated routine, your radar will enable you to monitor the receptivity as you go. Great persuaders customize each presentation. Bringing individuality to each exchange provides a critical vitality to the relationship and dramatically increases the likelihood that your audience will feel a connection to you. Anytime we are in need of someone else's input, whether it's for a new product or just because we need advice on a personal issue, we place ourselves in a vulnerable position. In doing so, we acknowledge that we need help. When in this state, we can definitely tell whether the person trying to persuade us has our best interests at heart or not. It is not your customer's job to remember you. It is your obligation and responsibility to make sure they don't have a chance to forget you. That was said by Patricia Fripp, and very important to understand. Because we know that when we meet someone for the first time, we are being judged. Be your past history, communicated expectations, or what other people have said about you, your body language, tone of voice, or even your word choice. Being aware of how you come across others is crucial to your success. We are very good at categorizing people when deciding whether they deserve our trust or our business. An example, a study was done with students in which they were shown a 2-second video clip of a professor. A survey was then given to a class that had just finished the semester with a professor and those who knew him from the 2-second video clip. The evaluations of effectiveness were very similar between the two groups. In other words, the 2-second group made the same judgments as the whole semester group. We tend to judge rapidly, and that snap judgment is usually correct. When you meet someone for the first time, he will tend to categorize you like someone he already knows. The positive or negative characteristics of the person you resemble tend to be transferred to you. Whether it's fair or not, this is reality. The bottom line is that your audience is pretty good at sizing you up in the first seconds of your meeting. Great persuaders know how to create magic in those first few seconds, and those feelings, as you know, will last a lifetime. The old school approach to persuasion put a lot of emphasis on the final outcome, clenching the deal, closing the sales. Back then, it was a lot more about getting the sale than having a true and lasting relationship with an actual person. The problem with being so closing-oriented is that a persuasive encounter is not a static, one-sided arrangement. The persuadee is not some brainless lump who will unquestioningly accept everything you say. They are a living, breathing human being, which means the exchange is two-sided. There are also different stages. The ebb and flow of emotions, questions, and concerns along the way. This tendency means that you have to establish rapport very early on, making a good and lasting first impression, and you have to keep the rapport going. This tendency means that you have to establish rapport very early on. What you're doing is making good and lasting first impressions. And throughout the presentation, you have to keep the rapport going. Many persuaders don't know how to maintain rapport through the entire exchange. They're good at breaking the ice and helping the audience feel comfortable, but when it comes down to getting to business, all of a sudden their demeanor changes. Their lighthearted, jovial manner may turn into an intense seriousness as they launch into the bottom line. When this transformation takes place, what is their audience supposed to think? The person who they were joking around with for the past 10 minutes has now completely morphed into someone else. Which one is the real person? It is interesting to find a correlation between lawsuits and the likability of a doctor. This also shows up in customer satisfaction and the desire to complain, whine, or find fault with their product or service. Malpractice lawsuit statistics show that patients who feel rushed, treated poorly, or ignored, again, these are all blows to their esteem, are the ones who are most likely to sue their doctors. Evidence shows that people don't sue doctors they like. This correlation also holds true for product, services, and long-term customer care. The studies also show that the inability to communicate, The inability to use humor and the inability to develop a relationship are also great indicators of a pending lawsuit. Great persuaders don't focus on their persuasive encounters in terms of initial kickoff and the final closing. They maintain rapport and connection by keeping the exchange emotionally and logically even. Think of your audience as a friend you will see and do business with again. Do not permit any abrupt mood changes. Be flexible and willing to adjust to the many moods and emotions your audience may go through. It can help to know some of the things your audience may feel. Now let me go through emotions that are commonly felt during a persuasive encounter. And understand that you can maintain rapport by being supportive, empathetic, and understanding. They could feel indifference, skepticism, distrust, fear, nervousness, interest, curiosity, enthusiasm. Or maybe they feel suspicion, surprise, eagerness, concern, confusion, fickleness, excitement. You need to understand how to use these feelings and emotions with your prospects. The Chinese proverb said, to listen is to learn and to understand is to inspire. Listening. One of the very best ways to establish and maintain rapport is to be a good listener. And you may be thinking, listening skills? Yeah, I know all about that. No, you know how to hear, not how to listen. Most of us only hear because the studies show that the average listener expends too much effort on trying to remember the facts. Listening is one of those skills that gets a lot of lip service, but we still stink at it. We think we've heard all about it, and therefore we're already good at it. Unfortunately, nothing could be further from the truth. Even with all the attention it's gotten, studies show that poor listening skills account for 60% of all misunderstandings. Even persuasion professionals, perhaps the most likely of all to trump themselves as listening experts, show dismal ratings on their listening skills. When corporate buyers were asked to assess representatives of other companies, over 50% felt that the reps talked way too much and that they were not in tune with the buyer. And when they did ask questions, they didn't ask the right ones. The burning truth is, when it came to the bottom line, were they persuasive or not, only 1% answered affirmatively. We know there's a positive relationship between effective listening and being able to adapt to your audience and persuade them. Additional studies show that the ability to listen increases job satisfaction and job performance. Great listeners are great persuaders. Another study shows us the importance of listening skills. Listening creates a situation in which a person will want to share his information. Listening accurately adds meaning to the message, allows proper evaluation of the message, and provides valuable feedback. Another common misconception is that great persuaders are people persons or extroverts. Wrong. The latest research shows that introverts outpersuade extroverts. Why? Because they listen more, they ask more questions, and they find out what their audience needs. Most extroverts, on the other hand, tend to overwhelm their audience with an endless list of features and benefits and hope one sticks. Introverts are simply better equipped to sense the wants and needs of their audience. Extroverts come across as an old-school salesperson, while introverts come across as wanted consultants. Why are we so bad at listening? Well, a big part of the problem is just that we talk too much. We think we're being helpful by offering lengthy, in-depth explanations. This may be appropriate on some occasions, but for the most part, your audience's emotional side begins to tune out. Let's face it, we are self-centered, self-interested, and self-absorbed. Whatever way you want to say it, the very nature of our existence predisposes us to focus on ourselves. So we talk too much because we like to feel important, knowledgeable, and helpful, but it is still a subconscious focus on ourselves. Meanwhile, the attention and focus of the encounter is not on the audience, and they start to drift. Now consider the opposite. If you talk less, invest all your energy and attention into making your audience feel good and understood, then, my friend, you will have rock-solid rapport and a lifetime loyalty. Remember, they don't need information overload. They need to feel like they are your top priority. They want to feel confident in your ability to find the solution to their challenge, the missing puzzle piece. You can't provide that elusive puzzle piece unless you know what it is. And you won't know what it is if you aren't listening. It's been said that we never learn anything with our mouth open. Take a habit of dominating the listening and let the consumer dominate the talking. So how do we sharpen our listening skills? Well, for one, consider listening a whole being experience. Listen not just with your ears, but also with your heart, your mind, and your eyes. What is this person really telling you? Take it all in. Not just their words, but the whole package. Their tone and body language, their hopes, their fears. Studies conducted by the Persuasion Institute have found critical distinctions between the listening skills of great persuaders and those of average persuaders. So let's compare a great persuader versus an average persuader. A great persuader is patient versus average is they're anxious to move on to the next topic. A great persuader lets the audience speak for themselves. An average persuader jumps to conclusions and makes assumptions. A great persuader makes sure their audience understands. An average persuader agrees too hastily. A great persuader will ask clarifying questions. An average persuader will move on without clarifying. A great persuader will listen to everything. An average persuader listens selectively. A great persuader takes notes. An average persuader daydreams. Or an average persuader shows no long-term interest. A great persuader offers silence. An average persuader just talks too much. A great persuader is knowledgeable in a helpful way. And here's the key. An average persuader is knowledgeable in an arrogant way. I know you're thinking you know how to listen. However, the studies show on average that you will only remember or retain about 20% of what you hear. And that's on a good day. This tendency is a challenge for you as a persuader and for your potential clients. So how do we define listening? Well, listening is defined as the cognitive process of actively sensing, interpreting, evaluating, and responding to the verbal and nonverbal messages of present and potential customers. Being able to listen is key. Research shows that listening is one of the most important skills a successful persuader can possess. In fact, interviews with persuasion managers point to the fact that poor listening is the most important factor that contributes to persuasive failure. As Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "What you do speaks so loud I cannot hear what you say." I have facilitated thousands of exercises, seminars, and trainings to monitor effective listening. I present persuaders with a win-win situation. We begin with a very easy role play with a very easy solution. To reach this win-win scenario, all my audience members have to do is listen and ask questions. Yet 95% of those people start to get angry, confrontational, intense with each other. The answer is so obvious it could have bit them in the butt. But no one saw it because they did not listen and did not ask the questions. They were so concerned with themselves and with winning, they missed the big picture. Listening is a skill we can all work on. But how do you know that you are connecting, especially when your audience is not going to tell you? Well, one of the obvious signs of a good connection is that the initial defensiveness and skepticism begin to dissipate. The mood relaxes and your audience feels like they can relax. They begin to voluntarily offer personal thoughts and feelings without you having to pull it out of them. Openness increases and resistance decreases. There is more eye contact and more open body language. It could be best summed up by saying things start to feel right. The exchange is natural, sincere, positive, and upbeat. You could compare it to how you would feel when talking to a good friend. It's important to understand that one of the myths about rapport with people is that you have to agree with each other on every point. Rapport and agreement are not the same. When you have good rapport, you will no doubt agree on many things, but this is incidental, not essential. Your ability to connect with people cannot be conditional. To be a powerful persuader, your persuasiveness cannot have any contingencies. You must be persuasive no matter who comes to your table. And that means accepting people where they are and still respecting them, listening to them, and caring about them. Some may think I go too far in saying agreement is incidental. Consider this scenario. Is it possible to have rapport with someone with whom you are agreeing on nothing? Think of your friends and family. You could probably think of someone you like and connect with very well, even though you don't agree on financial, political, or religious matters. Now let's talk about how great persuaders connect with people, what they actually do. Research at the Persuasion Institute sheds light on critical factors that are present when the audience feels the greatest connection with their persuader. Now let me suggest a few things that should be added to your persuasive repertoire. You hold no preconceived judgments or expectations. You are positive and upbeat, both up front and throughout the encounter. It is clear that you are there to serve, assist, and help. You are respectful. Your body language is open and friendly. Tone of voice is warm and friendly. The use of language and word choice is thoughtful. You speak in a natural, relaxed manner and still maintain energy and enthusiasm. You instill in your audience both hope and optimism. And your demeanor is always comfortable and genuine. There's a lot of talk about body language and other nonverbal communication. Every single gesture you make either attracts or repels your audience. Nothing is neutral. If there is a way to enhance your persuasiveness and help your audience feel more comfortable connecting to you, why not use it? Albert Mehrabian, an expert in the understanding of communication, delineates three different ways in which we are perceived. Visually, that's 55%, our body language and our appearance. Vocally, that's 38%, that's the tone in which our words are delivered. And verbally, that's 7%, the actual spoken words themselves. Our visual self-representation, including body language, is a big player in determining how we will be perceived by others. Some studies show that communication is as much as 93% nonverbal, and that people often place more stock in our nonverbal communication than in our words. You've heard the saying, actions speak louder than words. What is so very interesting and ironic about all this is that only 17% of people feel they use body language effectively for persuasion. Part of this oversight is because we are simply unaware of the potency of our nonverbal communication. We don't realize the treasure trove of possibilities it offers. Did you know that our facial muscles can produce over 250,000 different expressions? And even if we did realize these things, knowing how to utilize the information is another story entirely. Have you ever found yourself on a video and found it to be an unpleasant experience? The average persuader is unaware of his nonverbal behavior. A powerful way to raise your awareness is to practice in front of a mirror, or better yet, record yourself. Stepping into your audience's shoes and watching yourself from the other side of the fence will teach you more than any other method. Being well versed in body language is not only important to how you come across as a persuader, but it also helps you detect your audience is lying. That's because it's very difficult for someone to control all their nonverbal communication when they are being deceitful. Some of the red flags include forced eye contact or irregular eye contact, hesitation, irregular speech, touching the face, increased vocal fillers. I could go on and on. Remember, accomplished persuaders understand nonverbal behavior. This understanding will help you make sense of your audience's interest or buying signals. Are they ready to go? Or are they still resisting you and your message? And great persuaders know that facial expressions, increased mirroring, changes in the eyes, and specific questions asked all dictate that your audience is being persuaded or they're getting very close to buy. Spend the time to master the skill of recognizing these signals. Less than 2.5% of persuaders evaluated can actually read and interpret genuine persuasive signs and buying signals. They're shooting in the dark. Yet this is critical to great persuasion. Your audience is telling you they are ready to go. Are you listening or are you droning on? Earlier I talked about your rapport radar, but your body language is only half of the equation. The other half of the picture lies in the nonverbal communication of the person across from you. This is a live, interactive, two-sided exchange. You will best connect and be able to persuade when you can effectively identify the feelings and emotions of your audience. We carry our psychology in and on our bodies. Whether we like it or not, our bodies reflect what's going on inside. Being able to discern the psychological and emotional state of our audience merely by observation serves two purposes. One, you can take the pressure off your audience. Two, your understanding will guide you in terms of what to say and do next. Their nonverbal communication helps you know how to adjust, monitor, and enhance the persuasive cycle. The simple act of shaking someone's hand is paramount. Sometimes this is your only physical contact with your audience, and it is a common sign of respect. It can communicate weakness, indifference, warmth, concern, or even disrespect. Your audience will pick up on and judge all aspects of your handshake. What are they judging on? Amount of eye contact, the firmness of the grip, the duration, the type, the dryness of your hands, the depth of the interlock, the posture, the use of the other hand. You are being judged. We can decode a nonverbal message at great speed and with incredible accuracy. Nonverbal communication is decoded in our brain's limbic system, where genuine emotional expressions and responses are controlled. These activities are all part of our subconscious mind. Our nonverbal communication communicates our emotional state, our feelings, and even our tension. Remember that 95% of all persuasion is subconscious. We just feel it. The same tendency holds true for nonverbal communication. It is just something we sense. So how do we pick up on trust, tension, uneasiness, or even fear? Our feelings and reactions to nonverbal communication usually fall below the radar, and they typically take place in an instant. Microexpressions cross your face in a fleeting instant, lasting only a few tenths of a second. These expressions appear instantaneously in a response to an emotionally provoking event and are next to impossible to suppress. They reveal one's true emotion or feeling. It is also interesting to note that if you can get someone to mimic or configure their faces to resemble a specific emotion, they will have that feeling. Studies show that these changes in facial expressions also correspond with precise changes in physiological activity resembling the real emotion or feeling. In another study, college students were tested to see whether they could accurately identify the meanings behind certain facial expressions and tones of voice. The research consistently showed that the students who made the most errors in interpreting the meanings were those who had troubled relationships and greater feelings of depression. Your ability to connect, or your rapport radar, is directly linked to your ability to persuade. What about personality types? A big part of connecting with people and building rapport is simply discerning what personality types you're dealing with. For personality types like your own, you will probably find that the connection and rapport come fairly quickly and easily. What about personalities that totally clash with yours? We've talked about this before. To be a great persuader, you must be able to adapt to every individual no matter where he or she is coming from. Whether you click with someone or not, you're trying to influence him and help make his decision easier. You do this by harmonizing with his personality. If you can present a style he'll be comfortable with, you'll be more persuasive. If he's not comfortable, you could do everything right, do everything by the book, and he still won't budge. I'm sure you can think of a time you didn't buy because you just didn't like the persuader, and for no other reason. We're emotional creatures, and we want to like the person who is persuading us. The goal is to persuade how others want to be persuaded, not how you like to be persuaded. I have learned from great persuaders that the art of adapting to the people you're working with is getting a feel for their style. Get used to their style, preferences, desires, and expectations before attempting to persuade. This can only be done by observation when you first meet. As you first meet, talk, or get to visit and get to know each other, there are many different ways psychologists and other social scientists have developed to assess and analyze personalities. If you have a feel for some of the great personality types, it can give you some clues as to how to get inside the person you're working with. But the categories are extensive. For example, just one of the categories is amiable. Well, they've been called yellow, supportive, turtle, steadiness, amiable, giving, relator, sensor. But we want to make this as easy as possible. And as much as we hate to be categorized, we all belong to a distinct personality type, or at the very least, a personality direction. The way we lean most of the time in terms of how we act and react to the majority of stimuli. This means that we're pretty predictable creatures. For a great persuader, it's essential to become a student of human nature so you can predict accurately. So always be on the lookout for attitudes, traits, and behaviors with each style. Understanding personalities and adapting is a key aspect of great persuaders. Next, let's talk a little bit about humor. Actor John Cleese once said, "If I can get you to laugh with me, you'll like me better," which makes you more open to my ideas. And if I can persuade you to laugh at a particular point I make, by laughing at it, you acknowledge its truth. Understanding that the value of humor in a persuasive context gives you tremendous leverage. Your task is not only to realize humor's profound influence, but also to develop the necessary skills to be able to use it in a powerful and ethical way. As you become more and more skilled at incorporating humor into your presentations, you will discover that humor almost always has a place. You see, the research shows that humor can create a positive environment. It increases audience attention. It makes your presentations more memorable. It entertains and it empowers. It makes you more likable. It creates rapport and receptivity, increases trust. It disarms negativity, skepticism, and distracts the audience from overanalyzing. Great persuaders have developed a sense of humor. Ultimately, your goal as a persuader is to give your audience that boost they need to take the next step. You want them to come away with a fresh perspective that inspires them and makes them hopeful. Think of your humor as having a therapeutic effect that will give your audience the fortification they need to confront their challenges. Dwight D. Eisenhower said, Laughter can relieve tension, soothe the pain of disappointment, and strengthen the spirit for the formidable tasks that always lie ahead. It is very unlikely that your audience will feel angry, depressed, anxious, guilty, or resentful while enjoying your humor. Your humor can have a domino effect of goodwill and instilling positive emotions in your audience. If you can help your audience members to feel happier, you will in turn open the locked doors of persuasion and influence. Humor also increases energy and productivity, which will feed your audience's positive emotions even more. Humor must be deployed cautiously. If used inappropriately, it can be offensive and may cause your audience to turn against you. Humor should only be used as a pleasant but moderate interruption. Now, here's an important rule of thumb. If you are generally not good at telling jokes, don't attempt to crack them when you're in a persuasive situation. Be sure that you have good material. Non-funny humor is not only ineffective, but it's also irritating. They are either going to laugh with you or feel sorry for you. Modify your humor so that it's appropriate for your audience. Once your audience feels comfortable with you, they will be more in tune with your message and more likely to remain attentive. Audience members usually like and are drawn to a person who has a great sense of humor. Great persuaders naturally develop rapport while using humor. I have always known that humor had some effect on rapport, but the research is showing that the effect extends beyond anything I ever expected. However, a persuader must be careful with humor. Great persuaders are not stand-up comics. They are simply able to get others to smile, feel good inside, and even laugh. Don't despair if everyone does not laugh. In fact, many people won't laugh, but they'll still be smiling on the inside. If your audience is smiling, either physically or mentally, you've done a great deal toward increasing your ability to persuade them. This vital humor for persuaders not only connects you to your audience, but also increases people's attention to you and your message. Humor can enhance or detract from your message. What has been found is that humor that is relevant to your message works. But when it's irrelevant, it will disrupt your message. Humor puts your audience in a good frame of mind. When your audience is in a good disposition, they are less likely to disagree with you. You develop rapport with your audience and they like you more. Humor also increases trust. The skill of using humor can be learned and mastered, but only with consistent practice. Sometimes you may fail, but keep at it until you've harnessed the power to make others laugh. Then others will always feel good when they are in your presence. They will also take what you have to say more seriously. Humor will give you the power to motivate and influence others in a productive, positive way. Humor is rapport. Then when you get into the science of synchronization, you have to talk about mirror matching. It is human nature to mirror match or to synchronize with the people we connect with. We don't even think about it. It happens so quickly and so subconsciously that without a replay, one is unlikely to even notice it. What if you were aware of it? Could it be used to help you even become more persuasive? Research says yes. When you mirror your audience, you build rapport with them. Mirroring operates at a subconscious level to demonstrate that the parties are starting to synchronize and get into rapport. People are inclined to follow and obey those that they perceive as similar to themselves. If they shift in their posture, you should eventually do so too. If they cross their legs, you should cross your legs as well. If they smile, you smile too. When you mirror them, they will subconsciously feel that you have much more in common with them than may actually be the case. Why? He likes you because you are like him. He perceives you in the same way he perceives himself. When using mirroring and matching, you want your audience to subconsciously say, "It feels like I've known you for years." Mirroring speeds up the process of connecting and effectively communicating with anyone. Obviously, it's imperative that mirroring and matching comes across as natural. Great persuaders know how to mirror or reflect their audience's actions, not to imitate them. If people think you're imitating them, they may feel mocked and become offended. They will see you as phony and they will no longer trust you. Instead of directly imitating, just mirror match the overall tone and demeanor of your prospect. You can safely mirror things such as language, posture, gesture, and moods. The reality is that mirroring is the best predictor of rapport. And you can develop rapport by mirroring your audience's emotional state, energy level, language, voice patterns and inflections, and even mood. And with rapport and connecting, we have to talk about people skills. And that's a key to rock-solid rapport. Now, this principle may seem overly obvious, but it's another one of those skills that we think we've mastered when we definitely have not. We can all improve and grow. A full 96% of those surveyed rate themselves as much better in their people skills than they actually are. Remember, more jobs are lost due to the inability to work well with others than any other factor. An interesting note, the Carnegie, depending where you're from, Institute of Technology found that only 15% of employment and management success is due to intelligence or technical training, while the other 85% is due to the ability to deal with people successfully. Even Roger Ailes, he was a PR advisor to Ronald Reagan, Bush, quite a few of the presidents, said, "If you could master one element of personal communication that is more powerful than anything, it is the quality of being likable. I call it the magic bullet, because if your audience likes you, they'll forgive just about everything else you do wrong. If they don't like you, you can hit every rule right on target and it doesn't matter." And there's been countless books that have focused on people skills, but let's just go over a few. How well are you really doing? Not how you think you're doing, how your audience thinks you're doing. There's concern. So this is what great persuaders have mastered. Concern. Having concern means exhibiting genuine friendliness and goodwill for the other person's best interest. It means acting with consideration, politeness, and civility. It is the foundation for all interaction, and it creates a mood of concern in return. Being positive. People want to be around those who are positive and optimistic. Focus on the positive and bring hope to your audience. Hopeful messages bring out the best in people and create a positive image about you and your position. Oh, and names. One of the quickest ways to form an immediate bond with people is by remembering their names. Try to use your client's, customer's, audience's name within the first 10 seconds of the conversation. Using their name tells your audience that you care and value them as a person. Research also shows that it increases your persuasiveness. How about a smile? A smile helps make a great first impression and demonstrates happiness, acceptance, and confidence. Your smile shows that you are pleased to be right where you are meeting this person. As a result, your audience in turn becomes more interested in meeting you. And then there's respect. The more your audience respects you, the more persuasive you will be. Building respect often takes time, but there are things you can do to facilitate it. Remember that how someone feels about you is often influenced by how you make them feel about themselves. What about appearance? Appearance strengthens or weakens rapport. Whether we like it or not, appearance definitely affects our ability to gain and maintain rapport. Your physical appearance, your clothing, your office accessories, and your personal accessories are all part of your appearance. It's all part of the package. Appearance lies in simple things that many people overlook, like being in shape, watching your weight, your clothes, paying attention to your accessories. That could be your jewelry, your glasses, your earrings, your hair. A study at the University of Pittsburgh shows that there's also a direct correlation between good appearance and higher incomes. The bottom line is that attractive people are more persuasive than less attractive individuals. But it's also more than just appearance. Now, appearance can be considered hairstyle, clothing, weight, shoes, face, strange hairs in strange places, hands, nails, and jewelry. And when you have that attractiveness with that appearance, it can trigger more confidence, strength, warmth, sensitivity, excitement, prestige, and success. As you can see, with being attractive, it's more than just looking beautiful or handsome. It deals with the whole person inside and out. When we come in contact with someone of the opposite sex, the attractiveness concept is magnified. Attractive females can persuade men more easily than unattractive ones, and attractive males can persuade females more easily than unattractive males can. This type of attraction works because it creates a positive association trigger. It captures attentions and builds esteem. When a persuader is likable and optimistic, these traits increase attractiveness. Then there's similarity and familiarity. And how do those strengthen rapport? Well, similarity theory states that we like familiar objects more than less familiar ones. The same holds true with people. We like people who are similar to us. This theory seems to hold true whether the commonality is in the area of opinions, personality traits, backgrounds, or lifestyles. If you watch people at a party, you will see them gravitate toward those who are similar to themselves. As a persuader, you can increase your ability to connect with your audience if they feel that you have a lot in common with you. So where do great persuaders find that common ground? Values, goals, interests, experience, perspective, attitude, morality, appearance, socioeconomic background. You could be from the same regional area. The list goes on and on. Although I want you to remember that people hate to be treated like children. insulting questions, condescending attitudes, or pure arrogance are included in this category. As great persuaders find similar attitudes between them and their audience, the attraction toward these great persuaders becomes more positive. People prefer to associate with others who share the same religious, political, ethnic, drinking, and social habits. Great persuaders are able to find agreement in as many areas as possible. Research shows that if a person disagrees with you on a particular position, he or she will find it offensive and will typically evaluate the source negatively. People associate and interact with those they view as similar to themselves. Cliques are often based on such commonalities as friends, gender, age, school, education, professional interest, hobbies, and ethnic background. Now, the opposite is also true. People are wary of strange and unfamiliar stimuli. When there are strange stimuli, there is a distinct disconnection. This situation could arise simply from something someone has never seen before or is unaccustomed to. On the flip side, frequent exposure of a strange stimuli generally leads to liking it. And we have to talk about proxemics, the science of space. Anthropologist Edward Hall created the science of proxemics, in which people use, react to, configure, and occupy the space around them. We all want our own space, and we feel uncomfortable when people violate our personal territory. Well, it may sound overly obvious. Research shows that many persuaders get too familiar too fast. Disrespect your audience's personal space, especially on that first meeting. You will not build rapport. Many persuaders don't even know that they're violating their audience's space. They may think, for example, that by reaching out and touching your audience's members on the arm, they will be seen as warm and extending. Such a gesture may really be a turnoff, though. What does it feel like? Imagine that you go to a movie theater, and there are 150 seats in the whole theater, but only 10 people watching the movie. Now, social custom calls for everyone to spread out. Let's say you take your seat, and the nearest person is 20 feet away. How would you feel if a stranger came and sat down right next to you in the theater of empty seats? That would be a violation of your personal space. Understanding proxemics requires an understanding of territory and the role of dominance. The bigger office, the armrest on the plane, the larger chair, sitting at the head of a conference table, getting into someone's face, all these have hidden meanings. It could be unwanted touching or jumping into a foreign conversation that damages likability and rapport. Be observant. How is your use of space perceived by your audience? Always err on the side of giving extra space instead of too little. So does this science really matter, the science of proxemics? The distance you keep or don't keep when persuading someone communicates a message. Great persuaders understand rapport and interpersonal communication, and they respect personal space. They will find that the proximity between a person and a persuader affects the way they are able to interact with each other and what message their interaction sends. When we sit at the table or across from the desk, we each draw invisible lines of our perceived personal space. When these invisible territorial lines are violated, tension is created. We all have regions or areas where we permit others to enter or prevent others from entering. Great persuaders recognize when an invitation to enter their audience's private zone is being extended. Your audience's intimate area is not to be violated by you. In North America, that area extends from your audience's face out to about 24 inches. Most social interaction takes place between 4 and 12 feet of distance. This personal space preference not only varies by individual, but also by culture. For example, in the Middle East or Latin America, it's reduced by 50%. In Germany, on the other hand, the space is larger. It's kind of fun to watch two people from two different cultures trying to communicate. One is violating the other personal space, while the other is backing up in an attempt to regain their personal space. And the two are in some sort of dance to maintain and regain comfortable communication space. So how do we put this all together? The Chinese proverb says, once you pour the water out of the bucket, it's hard to get back in. What I'm saying is your first impression is critical. It does not matter how fast your car is or how it will perform if it is rusted and unpainted. The first impression of a rusted, dirty car will inhibit your ability to convince someone that it is a great car. The ability to create and establish interpersonal relationships is critical to your success as a persuader. Learning to establish an instant connection and to develop long-term rapport will enhance your ability to persuade. Fine-tune your radar to understand how to respond to the person you're working with. And that's with what you do and what you say. Remember, first impressions last a long time. They're hard to change. Applying these principles will ensure that your first encounters go smoothly. Once you've made that initial connection, you could focus on maintaining a genuine, lasting rapport. You will know when you've connected and established rapport. Your audience will be at ease. They will be happy, relaxed, and personable. Your exchanges will flow and feel very natural, just like talking to an old friend.